Chapter 38. Ron called Lorraine to check on their date for the airplane in the park, but got no answer. After the fourth call, he realized that he'd been stood up. He told himself that he really didn't have enough money to be going to New York for any reason. He told himself that he was better off. She'd only smiled at him one time in their whole conversation. That was probably why she was Julian's friend. He wondered if Julian was behind him being stood up and decided that it wasn't important. He was supposed to call Rebecca today anyway. He spent the morning rewriting his paper. After a few hours, he felt good about the changes he made. He was closer to the way he saw things in his head than he'd ever been before, in anything he'd ever written. It bore a relationship to what he actually thought, and described the process that brought him to his conclusion. It didn't exactly look slick, but it sure as hell wasn't sloppy either. There was just this one problem. He had it with pronouns. He was staring at the page in a state of complete immobility because he had no idea of the difference between its and its, or two, and two for that matter. At least he knew the last pair weren't pronouns. Finally, he picked up the notebook and threw it across the room. It knocked over a glass of old water. "What was that?" said Marjorie from the kitchen. She knocked quickly on the door as she opened it. "I dropped a glass," said Ron. He sat encased in a pile of crumpled papers and pointed to the overturned glass on the other side of the room. "Aren't you going to clean it up? It's only water. It won't do any damage if I let it soak in. In fact, if I drop an occasional glass on different parts of the rug, it will eventually get washed." "You're a son of a bitch." "That's right," he yelled as she closed the door. He got up to pick up his glass. He knew this wouldn't be the last of it. He reached into his laundry bag, took out a dirty shirt, and stomped it into the wetness with his foot. Marjorie came back in the room while he was in the middle of the operation. "You're a pig. Would you leave me alone so I can get some work done?" he hollered. "What work? Crapping up the house?" She raised her volume. "George, come here and see what he's doing." "I'm leaving," said Ron. "I mean, for good. The hell with college. I can't take living with you. You treat me like I'm 12 years old." "You've got it pretty damn good here. 20 years old, and he quits a good job to go back to school. To learn what? I don't know," she said, mimicking his confusion. "You win," he said, speaking very slowly. "I'll lap up the water if you want. Just go away. Leave me alone. You're right. I quit a good job, and I'm not sure why. So you better hope that it works out, or you're going to have to buy me a room with padding on the walls." "No," she snarled back. "You're the one who will drive me crazy. Then you can come and visit me at Overbrook on Sundays, and you won't have to worry about what I say and what I don't say." It was a standoff. She walked away, and George came into the kitchen yelling, "What the hell is going on?" She wanted him 5 minutes ago to help her make a point. "Nothing," she snapped. "You don't care what happens here." "What did I do?" hollered George. "What do you ever do?" she snarled back. George turned red and hollered louder. "Don't be treating me like an animal just because you have a fight with him." Marjorie started to cry, making Ron feel guilty. He cleaned the room and they left him alone. While he was on his knees, changing the mattress sheet, Chipper came over and licked his face. The dog always needed to be reassured after they hollered. Ron finished the cleaning and went out. He walked to the corner booth and called Rebecca. She was formal. I thought about us last night, she said. Thanksgiving vacation starts on Tuesday. Let's take a vacation from each other until after that. Let's just not see each other anymore, said Ron quickly. He wasn't in the mood for this shit either. If that's what you want. You're not leaving me much of a choice, said Ron. Do you want to come down and talk about this, she said. Not now, said Ron. I'll call you again later if you want. I don't know, said Rebecca. I just don't want to talk to you right now. Right, said Ron. Goodbye. He watched his hand hang up the receiver. He asked himself why he'd done that. He walked out of the booth, made a circle around it. He told himself he was really going nuts. Hank spent the day calculating the diminishing time he and Jolie had left before it was time for her to leave for work. She didn't show up. He realized she wasn't coming, and he felt hurt, then angry, and finally worried. The last condition was the easiest for him to cope with. He spent the evening wondering if he should go down to the club or try to call her there. At midnight, he realized that the only movements he'd made all day that weren't connected were the bathroom had involved sitting in all four of the chairs around their kitchen table. He grimaced for what seemed like an hour and went to bed. He couldn't sleep, but it was quiet, and he didn't mind lying there. He heard her come into the apartment, and he heard that she wasn't alone. The refrigerator door opened and closed, followed by the popping of the champagne bottle. He'd flinched like he'd been hit, and a tear squeezed out of his eye. She came into the room, turned on the overhead light. "We've got company," she said. He squinted his eyes and sat up. "Don't pretend to be asleep," she smiled her elastic smile. "Come out and have a drink." "Who's here?" said Hank. "Vic, the piano player from the club," said Jolie. Hank flashed on how he got sick down at the club. "Why is he here?" "Come out and have a drink," she said firmly. "We want to talk to you." Hank didn't like the way that sounded. He wasn't sure how he'd gotten to the other side of "we" she had mentioned. "I'll be right out," he said. When they were all in the living room, Hank in the armchair and two of them on the couch, Vic casually draped his arm around Jolie's neck. She moved out from underneath it. Hank watched her. She leaned forward and rubbed her palms on her thighs. "Do you want to do something exciting, Hank?" She had a secret smile on her face. "What do you mean?" "Let's all go to bed together." Vic grinned and brought his arm back around Jolie's shoulder. Hank watched her let him hold her there. "Have you been sleeping with him?" he asked weakly. "We've slept together." Her secret smile was fading. She leaned back against Vic, who was lighting a cigarette with one hand. "Come on, Hank," she said dreamily. "Don't get weird. It would be fun." "I'm going out," said Hank. He walked into the bedroom to change into some reasonable clothes. She followed him. "Are you leaving me?" she said. "Doesn't sound like you want me around." "I'd do this for you," she said. "I'm sure you would," said Hank. The prisms of light that reflected down from the overhead were bouncing off of his glasses. "Where are you going?" "For a ride. Do you want me to come with you?" Hank was flustered. He didn't know why she was doing this to him. Everything that was supposed to make him happy was ripping at the inside of his stomach. She had twisted everything. "You wait here," she said. "I'll tell him to leave." She left the room, closing the door. Hank plunked down on the bed, stared at his toes. He hoped that she'd speak softly so he wouldn't have to hear what they were saying. Where had he thought she was when she was sleeping with Vic? She had wanted to compare them, right in his and her bed. He got up like he wanted to get away from the thing. He went to the door and put his ear against it. He heard her laugh and say goodnight. Hank drove the VW smoothly. He didn't know where he was going. They hadn't exchanged a word since she'd gotten rid of Vic. He thought maybe he could just drive until he died. Jolie had begun to watch him. The blondish red curly hair was more of an uncombed tangle than she'd ever seen it before. His glasses looked like handcuffs on his eyes. His shirt collar drooped down like a noose. In short, he looked unhealthy and disheveled. "I haven't been any good for you, Hank." "I guess not," said Hank. "Give me a cigarette, will you?" "You hate my cigarettes." "I just want one because they're yours. I'm not sure how to get close to you anymore." The voice that came out of him was sad but calm. "I couldn't have been any good for you either. What am I supposed to think of myself when I do something like I just did?" "When did you sleep with him?" "Today." "Are you going to sleep with him again?" "I don't know," she said in a self-disgusted tone. "Promise me that you won't sleep with him anymore." He said it and knew that it was how it felt, but he could not for the life of him figure out where the words had come from. "Can I touch you?" she said. Hank held out his hand. She put it between her legs and closed her thighs on it. "Do you want to have a baby?" Hank straightened up behind the wheel. He pushed his glasses further up on his nose, cleared his throat, and said, "Yes, I do." "I needed to do this, Hank. I don't know why. Some kind of sick test that I wanted to put you through. Hank, I want to be a good wife. I want to spend afternoons thinking about you coming home from work and giving me a good, hard fuck. I can make you happy, but I can't handle the feeling that you just sit around all the time. I can start working for my father next week. I can work enough so that maybe you'd only have to work part-time. But let's get away from here. It doesn't feel right around here." When they got back to the apartment, she sat him down with the face of a geisha and did the most modest striptease for him. Then he pounded into her like a pile driver. The harder he fucked, the further apart she spread her legs, until her heels locked behind the bedpost and she was chanting, "Do whatever you want to me, baby." Ron's eyes opened and he looked straight for the door. Went to get the Sunday paper. He put on some coffee, lit a cigarette, settled down to read. Most of what he saw disturbed him. Articles about the necessity of victory in Southeast Asia made him feel desperate and angry. He wondered if young people in Greece and Rome had felt the same way when their countries had gotten perverted. When he could smell the coffee perking from across the kitchen, he knew that it was done. He heard one of them moving around and beat it back into his room with the paper. The possibility of spending another day at home made him nervous. He got dressed, slipped out. He hadn't had a shower or brushed his teeth or combed his hair, but he was on the road. He stopped and ordered some coffee at a diner and used the sink to wash and gargle and his fingers to straighten out his hair. He took a quick sniff under his armpit to see how objectionable he was, decided that it wasn't bad at all. He was taking the scenic route to the college, but he didn't know why he was going there. The round trip would take about an hour and a half. It gave him a goal and a sense of destination, both of which were comforting. He flipped the radio dial between stations, thinking about the way the streets were slow to wake up on Sundays. He wondered if he should call Rebecca and invite her to breakfast. Why not? It was almost 9. On the 5th ring, a sleepy voice answered the phone. "Oh, shit," thought Ron. Against his better judgment, he said, "Is Rebecca there?" An annoying voice inside him was saying he should have just hang up. "Who wants her?" said Mr. Vanelli. "Ron Tuck." "Oh, yeah. Isn't it a little early on Sunday morning to be calling her?" The question amused Ron, and he decided to run a little. "Just got back from Mass and Communion, you know. It's a great way to start the day." "Wait a minute," said Ranelli. He staggered out of bed and stuffed his hand down the front of his pajamas, stretched and yawned until he got to his daughter's door. He took his hand out and knocked lightly. "Becky, you awake?" "Yes, Daddy." He loved it when she called him Daddy. It never ceased to impress him. "That turkey Tuck is on the phone," said the butcher. "I'll be right there," she said quickly. Mr. Ranelli's smile disappeared. Her door opened. She passed him on the stairs to take the call in the kitchen. They planned to meet for lunch, and Ron decided that maybe he'd better go home, take a shower. He replayed what he'd said to her. "We're two pretty good people who like each other. We should be able to work this out better." She had agreed. By the time he got back to his house, he was in a good mood. "I want to talk with you," said Marjorie. "It's about Thanksgiving." "When is it?" said Ron. "This Thursday," she said, trying to be patient. "What about it?" "I want to know if you're going to be here." "Of course," said Ron. "For the whole day?" "I don't know. Probably not." "For how long are we to be honored with your presence?" "I don't know. I don't want you eating and running out the door, or standing in the kitchen and trying to hurry the meal up because you've got someplace to go." "I guess this marks the beginning of the holiday spirit," said Ron. "I can do without your lovely disposition." "I've got a great solution to that. I'm not eating here in Thanksgiving." "Where are you going?" "I don't know yet." He went into the bathroom. When he came out, she was still sitting at the table. "Do you want some coffee?" she said. Ron looked at the clock. "Maybe, quickly." "Why do you always have to watch the time?" "I've got a date." "With that nice girl?" "Which nice girl?" said Ron. "You mean Rebecca? Would you like to bring Rebecca here for Thanksgiving?" "I think she'll probably eat with her family, don't you?" "I don't know. I thought maybe that's why you didn't want to be here." "I'll be here," said Ron. "You know there's no need to lay down rules and regulations about how I should act." He paused and thought. "Who's coming?" The way she looked down at the table told him that they'd finally gotten to the point of the conversation. "I did invite some people that I haven't told George about yet." "Who?" "The new minister, his wife, and their 2 adopted daughters." Ron looked at her in amazement. "You didn't even mention it to George?" "No," she said, "and unless I can count on you to back me up, it's going to be very difficult. We'll all be sitting at the table, and nobody from our side except Aunt Dottie will have anything to say." "Have you told her?" Marjorie looked down at the table again. Not yet. I'll make sure that I'm here and in good form. But by evening, I'll probably have had enough. Just make sure that dinner goes smoothly. You're the only one in the family who can discuss religion with people like that and not look stupid. I don't know about that, but I'll be around. Thank you, said Marjorie. Ron wanted to hug her, but didn't. He wanted to tell her that he knew her life was pretty boring most of the time, and that she was always looking for ways to make it better. Rebecca was wearing a turtleneck top and a suede skirt. Ron immediately told her how good she looked. He was glad that he'd got home and changed. Where do you want to have lunch? I don't know, she said, as she crossed the street. Let's take a ride first, said Ron. Okay. His idea was to go up to the reservation and walk on one of the paths that led back through the woods. He didn't expect to get laid there or anything, but for some reason, he wanted to see himself there with her. He was sure that he didn't want to break up with her by the time they had lunch. The tension that was still between them from yesterday's phone call gave them a newness around each other that had been lacking in the last week. Part of the problem, said Ron, is that I really want to sleep with you. He watched her smile and decided to continue. The truth is, I'm sort of obsessed with the idea. I just can't plan to sleep with you, Ron. You make me feel excited and like I want to sometimes. It just hasn't worked out yet. It'll happen. If you would learn to relax and not try to push things, just be a little patient. I suppose I could tell you that it would be a lot easier for me to relax if we slept together. That's what you meant by being patient, isn't it? That's not quite it. It's like you've got it on your mind all the time, and I can see it on your face most of the time. When you talk to me about anything, you aren't gentle with me. It's like you want to get it over with. It must be awful for you, said Ron, feeling that he had just about as much of this as he was able to stand. You don't make me feel comfortable. I hope that I'm not comfortable until I'm dead, said Ron. Deciding to ignore his last statement, she said, I know that sex is different for a man. Sometimes I feel sorry for you. He started to say that anybody's pity was of no interest to him, but lit a cigarette. What are you going to do later? I've got a paper that's got to be done before vacation. In fact, she said suddenly, it has to be done by tomorrow, because that's the last class day before we leave. Ron saw that she had truly forgotten about it and was in a minor panic. I better take you back, he said. Hank woke up with an erection that was ready to make babies. He told Jolie about it, and she put it to work instantly. They stayed in bed until after 3 p.m., and then it was time for her to go to work. Hank was worried about the piano player. Is Vic going to be there? She reached under his robe and stroked his cock. He doesn't stand a chance. She got down on her knees and gave his dilapidated dick a goodbye suck. She left Hank grinning so much that his mouth hurt. Then he began to feel the mucus slide down the back of his throat and head for the bathroom, holding his book. 30 minutes later, he came out, called his parents. Do you want to come to dinner? Said his mother. I can't, said Hank. He asked to speak to his father. There was an awkwardness on the other end of the phone, followed by Hank's father saying, What can I do for you, Hank? I need a job with you, said Hank flatly. When can you start? Not tomorrow, thought Hank. Jolie would be off, and he still had money in his pocket. Tuesday or Wednesday, he said. I'll see if I can have things arranged by then. Hank wasn't interested in what he would be doing or how much he would be making. He could tell Joe Lee that he'd gotten the ball rolling, and that was all that mattered.